This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Just a few more weeks until Labor Day and that final barbecue. Now, you say you want to make something special for that, right? Like homemade condiments. But you haven't had any luck. Your mustard's so mild it's mistaken for mayo. So spicy, tears fall into the potato salad. Either way, it sounds like you have a mustard mishap, a case of food failure. But before you reach for the bottle of Heinz or Hellman's during your final summer cookout, we've got a food doctor with a prescription for success. Ali Bazzari is a culinary scientist and consultant with a doctorate in food biochemistry from the University of California at Davis. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hey, thanks, Ira.
He's joining us from KQED in San Francisco. And if you'd like to talk with him, give us a call. Our number is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. Ali, what exactly do you do as a culinary scientist?
That's a fun and complicated question. Basically, I use knowledge of how food works to make stuff tastier.
Ah, doesn't sound so difficult.
Yeah, it's not bad. And so most of my work is as a consultant for restaurants. I work with mostly fine dining restaurants, but casual restaurants as well. And it's awesome because I get to work with some of the best chefs around to sort of elevate their craft and understand what they're doing better.
Tell us more about that, Ali. How has understanding the science behind cooking helped you in the kitchen?
Sure. So I try to be equal parts cook and scientist. I've been cooking professionally since high school. And, you know, I was studying biochem as an undergrad. And I found that cooking in a restaurant, my learning curve was sort of steeper than it had any right to be. And I sort of started thinking, well, maybe there's other chefs around who could benefit from this sort of knowledge. So something as simple as understanding the process of what's going on when chicken skin gets crispy helps you make really crispy chicken skin.
That makes sense. We're going to be talking condiments, so we're going to need you to help us figure out our food failures in condiments. And in general speaking, are condiments tough to make on your own if you want to make your own condiment?
I really don't think they are. I think I've been sort of thinking about this idea of condiments and why we're so heavy into purchasing condiments rather than making them ourselves. I think a lot of it is because, you know, in the United States, we don't have as much of a tradition of having sort of indigenous condiments that everybody grew up making. So that might be part of it. But I mean, really, it's one of the things that you really can turn around the quality of the food in your house just by making your own.
Well, let's talk about making ketchup. What are you doing when you're making ketchup? What do you need to know about that?
Sure. The main thing that you need to keep in mind when you're making ketchup is you're going from tomatoes that you're blending up. So basically, you're going to have this soupy, watery liquid that has a bunch of chunks of tomato suspended in it. You want to turn that into something that's homogeneous and it's smooth and it's thick and ketchupy. And you know, in the bottle, a lot of people do that with xanthan gum, which is just an extract from some bacteria that makes stuff gooey and smooth. But when you're at home, what you can do is a lot of ketchup recipes will have you simmer the tomatoes for a long time. And what you're doing is you're actually extracting pectin from the cell walls of those tomatoes. And pectin is, it's the same sort of pectin that you would use, you know, in your grandmother's jelly recipe to make the thing set. Pectin's just a big, long molecule that sort of gets in the way of water and binds it up and helps make things thick. So the longer you cook those tomatoes, the more it's going to sort of break down and be extracted from the cell walls and make your ketchup thick and smooth rather than soupy and chunky.
So but if you're having a food failure and it is becoming soupier than saucier than ketchup, is there a way to correct that? Can you add something or change your technique?
You can add time. mainly just cook it longer. It's ketchup is an investment in time. There's few shortcuts to really getting to good ketchup. I personally, if you really have to have something ketchupy quickly, I really like using a pressure cooker. Pressure cooking the tomato sauce is a great way to get sort of the aroma and taste on par with what you want. And then you can use honestly, I mean, you can use xanthan gum. You can pick it up from a local health food store, and just a tiny bit of it will give it a really, really nice texture, very similar to what you're used to coming out of a bottle.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on to mustard. If ketchup is sort of a gel, what's at work when I'm mixing up mustard?
So mustard and all these condiments that we're going to talk about, they're sort of the same principles of what makes it thick, is basically you're going to be putting things in the way of water. So with ketchup, it's pectin from the tomatoes. With mustard, it's a bunch of different sort of carbohydrates that you're getting from the seed coat of the mustard seed, which actually, if you hydrate those, if you stick them in water, they'll start to get all ooey and gooey, sort of like caviar. Mm. And you use that sort of goo to help thicken your mustard. But the main thing that sort of determines success or failure with mustard is obviously the pungency. And with the pungency, you're actually dealing with enzymes. So all mustard seeds, black, brown, white, yellow, they all have enzymes locked inside the seed that are ready to sort of release the aroma of mustard. I like to tell people that it's sort of like when you have, you know, those glow sticks that you crack and the two chemicals mix and it makes it glows. It's just like that. When you break open a cell, you're allowing the enzyme to get to its substrate, which is usually just some molecule that really has no aroma. The enzyme will chop that thing up, and before you know it, aroma starts to sort of come out. So you wake up the enzymes that are already there in mustard seeds or mustard powder by soaking them in water. Any recipe you look at is going to have sort of a water soaking step. And once that happens, basically the clock has started. The longer you let those seeds or that mustard powder sit in that water, the longer you allow that enzyme to sort of wreak havoc on pungency. And traditionally, the way you say, okay, that's enough, you know, we've reached the level of pungency that we like, is to add some sort of acid. Mm. So Dijon mustard, usually it's white wine or white wine vinegar. Beer mustards, usually actually the alcohol from adding that beer helps to stop the process. And basically what you're doing is you're just killing the enzyme. Mm. You're sort of being the least gracious host of all. You're saying, hey, thanks for doing all this work. Now you die.
So, I've heard that line in movies. So when you get the do you taste the mustard till you get the pungency you want, and then you say, ah, let me stop it and throw some vinegar in it?
Yeah, that's exactly that's what I would do. And that's really the key to success with all these things is just taste it. Condiments in general are not black boxes. It's not something you have to stick in the oven and hope it works out well. Taste it as it goes.
Let's talk about mayo. How do you make mayo? What is mayonnaise?
So mayonnaise is an emulsion, which I taught at a culinary school for a few years, and an emulsion is the ultimate boogeyman word when you're in a culinary school, because it's the thing that students are afraid of. They're afraid that they're going to set out to make this nice mixture of, in the case of mayonnaise, it's basically tiny droplets of oil suspended in water that's sort of stabilized with egg yolk and mustard and all sorts of different things depending on what kind of mayonnaise you're making. So, you know, from a culinary student point of view, you really want to make this really smooth, beautiful sauce. And the worst thing that can happen is it comes out as sort of an oil slick.
Right.
And you've got this grainy, oily, nasty, sloppy mess.
Mm. I hate it when that
sort of avoid that. Yeah. Nobody wants that. But it happens a lot. And I think it's because of sort of a fundamental lack of understanding of what's going on. There's a lot of sort of kitchen myth that surrounds making emulsions, and it's actually really simple. So the idea is that oil and water hate each other. If you put a bunch of oil on top of some water, it's just going to sit there. In order to make an emulsion, so for instance, if the water is a vinegar and the oil is an olive oil, if you want to make a vinaigrette out of that, you want to make a good emulsion, the first thing you do is whisk it. And what the whisk is doing is basically each of those tines of the whisk that you're dragging through that mixture is just slicing its way through the oil and breaking it up into smaller and smaller droplets. Mm-hmm. So you can go from basically one giant droplet, which is the oil just sitting on top of the vinegar, to literally billions of droplets if you have a really fine emulsion. Mm-hmm. And the finer the droplets are, the harder it is for them to find each other and then separate back out. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the keys to making mayonnaise is having a really strong whisking arm.
But the mayonnaise has an egg in it, right?
The mayonnaise has an egg, and that's one of the difference between, you know, mayonnaise and a vinaigrette, where a vinaigrette has a much shorter sort of emulsion shelf life than a mayonnaise. And so what the egg is doing is a couple of things. People always talk about stabilizers and emulsifiers. You hear about it in everything from yogurt to hollandaise or mayonnaise. A stabilizer is anything that's just simply going to get in the way of liquids moving around in your emulsion. So like I was saying, the what will make an emulsion break is those droplets coming back together and separating out. Mm. So all the proteins in an egg sort of act like a net. They make sort of the continuous phase, the water in the emulsion, they make it much thicker. And so if you're an oil droplet and you're trying to find your star-crossed other oil droplet lover, it takes a little bit more effort. You're sort of moving in slow motion trying to get to that other droplet. So that just thickening it helps. Huh. The other thing that you have in eggs is emulsifiers. So stabilizers just sort of thicken and slow things down. Emulsifiers actually make that border between oil and water a happier place to live. They're like culinary peacekeepers. They are usually molecules that have some part of the molecule is very similar to oil, some part is very similar to water. So you can have a molecule that's happy to sort of straddle that border and make everybody just sort of mellow out.
It's the peace negotiator between the oil and the vinegar.
It's a peace negotiator.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And in fact, if you'd like, if folks at home or who are listening, like to try our own kitchen experiment, we have a kitchen experiment with salad dressing science and emulsions up on our website at sciencefriday.com/salad dressing, and you can experiment with different ways of making salad dressing with different emulsifiers on our website. Stay with us. You gonna stay with us a little more, Ali?
Sounds good.
We're gonna take a break, and we're gonna come back and talk more about kitchen magic. This time, we're gonna talk about hot sauce. Do you make your own hot sauce? Have problems with it? Well, we're gonna tell you about the secrets of a great hot sauce for your barbecue is. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatto. This is Science Friday. We're talking this hour about a condiment crisis as part of our food failures series. My guest is Ali Bazzari, a culinary scientist. And as I say, up on our website, if you'd like to try your own kitchen experiment along with us, we're doing an experiment with salad dressing science and emulsions. And you can try different ways of doing it. It's great for teachers and schools, too. It's made there. They have kids work on this themselves. It's located at sciencefriday.com/salad dressing. That's with the two D's in the dressing. My guest, as I say, is Ali Bazzari. Let's talk about how you'd whip up your own hot sauce, Sally. What would you do? What are the basic themes here?
Let's do it. So basic theme, obviously, is that it's hot. The heat of hot sauce is so often the defining factor, but there's really so much else going on that really goes into making a good hot sauce. There's when you break it down, there's sort of two families of hot sauce. There's the ones that you're going to use vinegar, and there's ones where you're going to sort of allow the hot sauce to sort of form a sour mash and actually ferment. And depending on where you are at in the country or in the world, you'll have sort of drastically different viewpoints. Mm. I come from Texas, where we have a mixture of some really amazing vinegar-based hot sauces, sort of Louisiana style, and then there's a bunch of really amazing fermented things. And I love both.
Mm. What is the biggest mistake people make when they're making their hot sauce?
A couple of different things. Hot sauces, to me, should always be deep and rich and smoky and complex. And a lot of times, if you're using raw peppers and you're just blending them up with some vinegar and salt, they're going to taste like raw peppers. You know that raw sort of green bell peppery aroma that smells like fresh cut grass? It's great, but it's not what you imagine when you go for a bottle of hot sauce. You want a bottle of hot sauce to taste like some guy from Louisiana thought about it for decades. And a few different ways to do that. One of the easiest is to just toast or grill whatever you're going to make the hot sauce out of. So if you've got a bunch of, Fresno and jalapeno chilies, blister them black on the grill. And your hot sauce recipe, if you keep all else the same, is just totally going to be in another world. The other thing is people a lot of times will put, chili powder and dried chilies and spices and all different sorts of sort of dried ingredients in their hot sauce. Those can also benefit from heat. So toasting them in a dry pan until they're really fragrant and aromatic is a great way to sort of add another layer of depth.
We have a recipe. We've asked our listeners for some recipes. I want to put you in the hot seat, so to speak, talk about hot sauce recipes. We have a recipe from Rachel in Tallahassee. Here is her recipe. I want to get your comments on it. You take a jar of fresh red cayenne peppers and you cut it into pieces. You have three dried chipotles, 1 teaspoon salt. Then you cover it all with vinegar, and you let it all sit for 2 weeks, and then puree it. What do you think?
So that sounds great. You know, I think the number one thing that I would tell anybody who's making not just hot sauce, not just condiments, but anything, is to get a scale. Get a scale and do your recipes by mass. It is one of the great unearthed secrets of why restaurants are so amazing, is because restaurant chefs are not spending 90% of their time figuring out how many cups in a ounce, gallon thing, and they're just doing it by mass, preferably metric system, and it's just so much easier. It's so much more scalable. Passing the recipes along to your friends, it's great. So that's the number one thing I would say. As far as specific to that recipe, yeah, if you're using chipotle chilies, I would toast them. It's a great way to just sort of add depth and darkness to the and intrigue to the sauce. I like the idea of sort of putting all these things in a vinegar and letting it steep. You're basically making like a hot sauce tea, which so many of these things, there's so many different sort of chemical reactions that are happening when you mix flavorful things together. I'm sure that hot sauce is a totally different story after a couple weeks.
I'll bet. Let's go to the phones and see if we can get a call or two from, let's start with, speaking of vinegar, let's go to Woody from Hawaii. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks. Let me turn off the radio. I have taken on, I make all these condiments, and I've been making them for years, but this year I've decided to take on vinegar. And I cut up a pineapple, took all the outsides of it off, soaked it in water and some sugar and to get a mother, and then poured it off about 4 or 5 days later. And now it's sitting in the cupboard with a cheesecloth over it, and it smells good, but I don't know when it's going to be done. And I want to follow this by doing wine vinegar, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Help!
For somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, you're doing a lot really, really right. That sounds fantastic. So the basic spiel behind how vinegar works is that you're taking sugars, you're having a bunch of yeast, turn them into booze. Then you're taking that booze and you're having bacteria eat the yeast, you know, basically leftovers, and turn that into vinegar. So it's actually sort of like a multi-stage process. So when you take a pineapple and you just use that fresh sort of pineapple juice, you're waiting for, first of all, yeast to turn it into pineapple wine, and then for the bacteria to come by and turn that into vinegar. What kind of container is it in your cupboard? Like, what's the shape of the container?
It's a canning jar, wide mouth canning jar.
Okay. Open, right?
Yeah, basically I took one of those sprout covers, and I put multi-layers of cheesecloth and then a sprout, one of those sprout covers over it. So
perfect.
It's got air.
So, he's asking how long should he keep this going for, I guess, right? When is it done?
That's a great question. You know when it's done? When it tastes really good to you. It's one of those things that it's not really going to be dangerous at any point. You taste it. If it tastes, you know, pleasantly acidic and the aroma is good, if you really like it as it is, I would pull it. People are often guilty of over-fermenting their vinegar. They get greedy. They say, oh, man, if it was good after 4 days, it's going to be great after 10. One of the problems is when the bacteria that make that vinegar run out of ethanol, run out of alcohol to digest and turn into vinegar, they'll actually turn on their own vinegar that they've made and start digesting that, which brings the pH up, which then if you're taking away the acid, you're allowing other bacteria to grow on it, and your vinegar can actually start to rot. So people will have this delicious vinegar that they waited too long, and then it'll turn into this nasty sort of rotten pineapple aroma. So When you decide your vinegar is ready, put it in a narrow neck container so you can sort of deprive those bacteria of the oxygen that they need to survive. Put a stopper on it and store it and use as you will.
Good luck, Woody. Hope it helps.
How about wine vinegar?
Exact same process.
Same process. In a couple of minutes that we have, if you've never made condiments before and you want to try one, what's the easiest one? What's a starter for you?
I love ketchup. So ketchup, as far as an easy condiment, everybody's had some experience making tomato sauce. You're making tomato sauce with a little bit extra vinegar and some spices.
Let me ask a really stupid question here, because I like to cook and I like food. Can you make ketchup so much better than what comes out of the bottle if you make it yourself?
Yes. It is a different experience. I personally don't really like ketchup on a lot of different things, and the only kind of ketchup that I really enjoy is stuff that I make myself. Usually, the original sort of English ketchups were much more savory and much more sour than our commercial ketchup, which is much more salt and sugar heavy.
Yeah.
And I like the sort of freedom that you have of playing around with it. The best ketchup I've ever made is actually a curry ketchup.
Wow.
That you take your basic ketchup recipe, toast some garam masala or whatever your sort of favorite curry spice blend is, stir it in there and let it sit for a couple days, and it is just one of the most amazing things you can put on anything.
All right, you gave me my project for the weekend. Thank you very much, Allie, for taking it.
You're welcome.
Allie Mazzouri is a culinary scientist. He has a PhD. He's a consultant with a doctorate in food biochemistry from UC Davis. Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us.